crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel. Thank you very much to Christopher Eames for taking last week's show where he spoke about the authority of the second division of the Bible, the prophets. Please go back and listen to that if you haven't yet, and you can be informed about the authorship of those books. On today's show, we're going to look at three events in the Middle East that actually make it look like Iran has had a pretty bad weekend. On this program, we speak a lot about how Iran is right now the driving force behind Middle Eastern events and how they have a pushy foreign policy and that others are simply reacting to Iran's movements. Well, this week we did have a reaction, or even this weekend we had a few separate reactions that we're going to talk about. Firstly, we'll speak about Israel's attack on an Iranian base in Syria, the very first time that Israel has attacked an Iranian installation in that country. Then we'll look at French President Emmanuel Macron's call for the Iraqi government to disband the Iranian-backed militias, this just being one of the latest of a string of incisive comments by the French leader against the Iranian regime. And then finally, we're going to look at Yemen and how the Iranian-supported Houthis look to have just lost one of their stronger allies in the nation, that of former President Ali Abdullah Saleh. But as we go through these three events, we're not just going to cover them as news events. In each of these arenas, we can actually know what the outcome will be of Iran's actions and the counteractions. The Bible forecasts what will happen in each one of them, in Iraq, in Syria, and in Yemen. Now, this isn't some off-the-wall speculation. We have been forecasting these things for the past 20 years, accurately forecasting them, because these events have been based on the sure word of the Bible. So let's first talk about events in Syria. No doubt you've been keeping track of what's been taking place in Syria over the last few years. Right now, we're at the point that the Islamic State is all but defeated. Russia and Iran, Assad's allies, they're trying to work out some type of political solution from here on out. Both of those nations want to have a military presence inside Syria in the aftermath of the war. Iran wants to set up bases, and it has set up some of those bases very close to Damascus. And for Israel, this is a red line. This is what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said to the Saban Forum in a pre-recorded message playing today, although it was filmed on Thursday and then released on Saturday just after this attack took place.
So let me reiterate Israel's policy. We will not allow a regime hell-bent on the annihilation of the Jewish state to acquire nuclear weapons. We will not allow that regime to entrench itself militarily in Syria, as it seeks to do, for the express purpose of eradicating our state.
And so on Friday night, or overnight on Friday, Israel struck at this Iranian target for the first time in the war. Either Israeli jets or surface-to-surface missiles targeted this military base about 13 kilometers south of Damascus. Pro-Assad news outlets in Syria said that it was an Iranian military base. There are reports that there were Iranian casualties, about 13 men. We're not exactly sure if that is true or not, but they're just the reports. Now, what's interesting about this attack is that it was a known target. And so the timing of this event is very much worth looking into. And Seth Franzman of the Jerusalem Post talks about this in his piece from yesterday, and I'll leave a link for this if you would like to read it on the show notes of today's program. He writes this: for more than a year, there have been warning signs that Iran was intent on constructing permanent bases in Syria, laying the groundwork for the era after ISIS would be defeated. On November 10th, the BBC released a report that Iran was building a permanent military base in Syria. The report had three satellite images with it from January, May, and October showing this site just south of Damascus. It's about 50 kilometers from the Israeli forces on the Golan Heights. The changes at the site showed new buildings, and the BBC ascribed the information to a Western intelligence source. So this, you might have seen reports of this back on November 10th, released by the BBC saying Iran is building up a military installation in Syria, just 50 kilometers from the border with Israel on the Golan Heights. And so what was going to happen from that? Of course, the Israeli government obviously knew about this site for some time, but they had chose not to attack it for whatever reason. And yet they did choose to attack it on December 2nd for whatever reason. We'll just discuss that. I'll continue from this timeline here from Seth Fransman from the Jerusalem Post. He says the report came out the day that Russian President Vladimir Putin met U.S. President Donald Trump in Vietnam. It was 2 days after a memorandum of principles had been concluded in Amman between the U.S., Russia, and Jordan regarding a ceasefire in southern Syria. So this report comes out a couple days later. It was 2 days after this memorandum of principles was concluded between the U.S., Russia, and Jordan about what was going to happen in the event of a ceasefire, in the ceasefire here in Syria. Now, this deal had originally been written back in July, and that was despite Israel's best efforts to try and make sure the deal insisted that Iranian-backed forces were removed from southern Syria. Then Israel didn't want this, obviously. And according to some reports, Israel wanted assurances that Iranian forces would be kept 60 kilometers from the Golan Heights. 60 kilometers. And it looked like that was going to be the case. A day after the State Department kind of said that the agreement did ensure that the Iranians were far from the border, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov came out and said the agreement did not indicate that the Iranian-backed forces would be withdrawn. And this left, as Fransman writes, Israel in a public conundrum. Israeli leaders had sworn to prevent Iran from establishing permanent bases, but the international community and local ceasefires were not enshrining Iran's withdrawal. So what are we going to do? Well, on November 20th, and this was a few days after Lavrov said that the agreement didn't say that Iranian forces were going to be pushed back out of Syria, or at least out of the border region on the Golan Heights, we had Prime Minister Netanyahu speak with French President Emmanuel Macron and told him that if the Iranian presence isn't removed, I'm going to strike Iranian targets in Syria. That was 2 weeks ago. And it's interesting that Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke to the French president at invitation of the French president about Iran. And he'll come into our program a little bit later. Nevertheless, even after this, there was more came out in the media about this base that Iran had. And then it was a couple of days ago or a day ago now that Israel decided that it would act. And Russia Today, they said that Israel attacked this military installation. Syrian sources said that Israel attacked this military installation of the Iranians. Iranian sources, which the Iranian Press TV, it said, quote, an Israeli fighter jet was flying at a low altitude over Lebanon's Baalbek region near Syria's border when Syrian missiles were launched. So you had Syrian missiles that were launched at the aircraft, apparently. Nevertheless, they didn't hit the aircrafts. The Israeli aircraft, and yet now this building is destroyed. Now, what was this building? What was this building? No one denies that it was an Iranian base. No one denies that, not even the Syrians. They actually said it was an Iranian base within this region that Israel considered a red line because of its proximity to the Israeli Golan. Now, it looks like this building, according to reports, was probably some type of ammunition depot to hold weapons for multiple groups connected with Iran. including Palestinian Islamic Jihad. So it was actually housing weaponry that was meant to be getting to Palestinians. It was also obviously going to be used to in the transition of weaponry to Hezbollah as well. But what about the timing of this? Why did it take Israel so long to strike this Iranian base? Now, once the details of this base were leaked, as Fransman brings out, Israel was really pressured to act. Now, the BBC reported this back in the early part of November, and we knew that it was an Israeli red line to ensure that the Iranians did not get close to the border. And so Israel was pressured to act, and they did. And they did by taking out and destroying much of this base. Now, it's still reports are still coming out. We'll see exactly how much destruction took place, whether there were, in fact, Iranian casualties. But it is interesting that at a time when red lines are not being kept with many Western powers against Iranian aggression, Israel decides that it will act because it knows, and it's known for some time, that Iran is very much dedicated to the eradication of the Jewish state. They're not just words to Israel. Yes, you might not have Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in power right now. You have Rouhani. But nevertheless, the goals haven't changed of the Islamic regime there. And one of their biggest goals is to take Jerusalem. It's to get rid of the Jewish state, push the Jews into the sea. That is their goal. And they're always working towards that. And they want to use Syria as a launching pad for that. And yet Israel said that it's not going to happen, or at least it's not going to accept Iranian bases on the border with Israel. Now, you can bet there are a lot of other nations in the Middle East right now that are breathing a sigh of relief that Israel, at least for now, is sticking to its red lines, that somebody is willing to push back against Iranian expansionism. But will there be more Israeli action in Syria? We'll talk more about that when we come back. We'll take a short break. Don't go away.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.fm. Thank you for listening. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're coming to you from Jerusalem, Israel today. We're looking at these three events of the weekend that make it seem that Iran has taken a bit of a hit in the region. First, we covered the Israeli attack on the Iranian base just south of Damascus. Now I want to talk about comments that French President Macron made on Saturday. Yesterday, he was hosting a Kurdish delegation in Paris. Now, this is a pretty big deal in itself. The fact that France is giving audience to the Kurds to hear about their concerns. You'll remember that in early November, or late October, actually, they had their vote, the referendum, the for Kurdish referendum. Over 90% of the Kurds inside northern Iraq, northeastern Iraq, voted to leave Iraq, to secede from Iraq. Now, the United States at that point decided that it would not back the result of that referendum. And indeed, many nations didn't. Israel did, but many others didn't. And instead, what we had was the Iraqi government then marched the tanks, the American-made tanks that they got from the United States, into the area of Kirkuk, just on the southeast, southwestern part of this of Kurdistan, take back the oil-rich territory. They did, along with the Iranian-backed Shiite forces, taking the area from the Kurds and really bringing the Kurds to their knees. Well, now, Kurdish leaders are in France and meeting with Macron. And though he's probably not taking up the mantle for Kurdish statehood necessarily, he did have some stinging words for Iran. And I want to quote now from Reuters about these words, because you have to look at them in the context of what the Israeli Prime Minister told Macron back 2 weeks ago, saying that he was going to attack Iran inside Syria. And that you have to look at what he's been saying against the Iranian ballistic missile program, again, what he's been saying in support of the Saudis. Well, now he is taking up the discussion, or ratcheting up the discussion one more step, to talk about Iraq and what Iran is doing in Iraq. And this is what he said after the meeting with Kurdish leaders. Again, this is from Reuters, a piece entitled "France's Macron Calls on Iraq to Dismantle All Militias." And their report reads this: French President Emmanuel Macron on Saturday called on Iraq to dismantle all militias, including the government-sanctioned Iran-backed Popular Mobilization Forces, the PMF, a rare public call to do so by a major Western power. Yes, extremely rare. Extremely rare, because the PMF here, with around 100,000 men, was Iran's ticket, or is Iran's ticket, to dominate Iraq, to control Iraqi territory in the post-Islamic State world, just as we said it would 2 years ago, using these forces, when these forces were the only ground troops that were going to be effective, as well as the Kurds, against pushing back the Islamic State. We knew that Iran only gave that sanction if those troops would be able to stay there, if those troops would be able to be part of the actual Iraqi government. And that was made so at the end of 2016. The PMF became part of the Iraqi military. And now you have Francis Macron saying, no, they should be dismantled. All those militias, when really he's just talking about the PMF, the ones that give Iran power in Iraq, he's saying it's time for those to be disbanded. The war against the Islamic State is all but over. There's no need for the Shiite militias to be such a fighting force for Iraq anymore. They should be dismantled. This is what he said, quote, "It is essential that there is a gradual demilitarization, in particular of the popular mobilization that established itself in the last few years in Iraq, and that all militias be gradually dismantled." Now, it's interesting. He wasn't vague with this. He said all militias, in particular, the one that Iran is backing and supporting. That is who he's taking aim at with this: Iranian influence in Iraq. Now, obviously, the Kurds are really upset with this group. There have been widespread abuses by the Shiite militias against the Kurds. They have been reported even against the Sunnis in Anbar province earlier as well. And so they don't want this fighting force to be part of the government. And maybe even Abadi might not necessarily want it, but he can't really do anything. That is the Prime Minister of Iraq right now. Now, it's interesting that following following those statements, there was a phone call with Abadi and Macron. They talked together about having a unified Iraq, but he didn't make any mention of Macron's call to dismantle the militias. That was left to his vice president. His vice president, who is none other than Nouri al-Maliki. Now, you'll remember him. He was a former prime minister, who was pressured to leave by the United States, and yet he is quite a contender right now for the prime ministership of Iraq when there are elections early next year. And he said this. He said that Macron was carrying out unacceptable interference in Iraq's internal affairs. These positions from France are absolutely rejected and harm Iraq's sovereignty and institutions. That's what Malaki said. He said that France is doing harm to Iraq's sovereignty. And we all know that Malaki's in the back pocket of Iran as well, and he could potentially be the prime minister soon enough. And yet it's interesting. It's interesting just looking at this French position. Now, while these are just words, it highlights a change from within a European nation in terms of what it is willing to do against Iran. Now, Iran, this has taken Iran by surprise. At least I believe so. Iran thought that Europe was in the bag and it didn't need to worry about any type of actions from the continent. Well, France is now starting to give them reason for concern. Last week, Macron said that they are going to need to have a sit down and discuss with Iran their ballistic missile program. And then Iran responded and said, well, up to now, we haven't considered France a threat, but the way they're talking, we're going to have to extend our missile capability to reach them. That's what Iran said in response to Macron's comments. Iran's not backing down. Now, you would think that was Friday when Macron gave that, or Thursday, I believe, when he said that Iran's acting in a belligerent way. We need to discuss and sit down about their talk about the ballistic missile program. Then you had the Iranian response on Friday saying, back off, or we'll develop missiles that target you. Well, that was Friday. And now on Saturday, Macron, he's undeterred. And he said that he is committed to ensuring that Iran's proxy force in Iraq, the PMF, disbands. Now, Iran likely did not factor in that a European leader would come on so strong so soon. But what this is doing, what Macron's comments are doing, are exposing how intent Iran is at controlling not just the Middle East. Not just the Middle East. They want the Middle East, but they're going to, anyone that doesn't come up, that doesn't join or doesn't, that wants to face up against Iran, they are willing to stare down. At least that's what it looks like. Now, they don't care who stands up to it. Iran is not going to back down. Now, what will be the future of Iran's proxy in Iraq? Now, the Bible has an answer for that as well, which we'll get to. Now, the final event I want to talk about of this past weekend, just briefly, concerns what's been happening in Yemen. Now, Iran has long supported the Houthi rebels in the north and east of Yemen, in along the Red Sea there, in their rebellion against the government. Now, this has been thoroughly proven, even when they took over the capital Sana'a back in late 2015, I believe it was, maybe even late 2014. There were Iranian leaders that talked about how they now governed four capital cities, governed Beirut, governed Damascus, governed Iraq, Baghdad, and now governed Sana'a. So even the Iranians were saying that they backed the Houthis in their rebellion. Now they have come out and said, well, we just morally support them. We're not sending them weaponry. Well, just this past week, there was a UN report that came out that attested to the four different ballistic missile launches by the Houthis this year into Saudi Arabian territory were in fact Iranian designed and Iranian made missiles that were transported to Yemen, disassembled, and then assembled when they got there. So we know that Iran has been providing materiel to the Houthis with this war against the Saudi aligned leadership. Well, the Houthis, for a couple of years now, have been fighting alongside supporters of the former Yemeni president, Ali Abdullah Saleh. That is, until this past week. They started fighting amongst themselves this week. And then on Saturday, just yesterday, Saleh said that he was ready for a new page in relations with the Saudis. Now, this is a pretty big event in Yemen's civil war, probably the most important event that's happened, I'd say, in the last year and a half in Yemen, is Saleh's desertion, it looks like, of the Houthis. This is what he said in a statement, quote, "I call upon the brothers in neighboring states and the alliance to stop their aggression," talking about the Saudis and their Sunni alliance against the Houthis, "to stop their aggression, lift the siege, open the airports, and allow food aid and the saving of the wounded. And we will turn a new page by virtue of our neighborliness." And then he goes on and talks about how they're willing to sit down and have dialogue with the Saudis. Now, the Saudis welcomed these comments, saying, yes, we're willing to sit down with you and talk with you about this. But the Houthis, they accuse Salah of betrayal for this. Now, one thing this is going to further do is expose the Houthi rebellion as being nothing more than an armed takeover backed by Iran, rather than a legitimate attempt to restore power to a former leader. While they had Salah on their side, they could say they were fighting to restore the true leadership inside Yemen. But now he's gone, and the Houthis saying that we're still going to fight. We're still going to fight Saudi influences. We're still going to be used basically as a tool of the Iranian regime to not only hit at Saudi Arabia, but also to control the Red Sea passageway we'll talk about in a second. So this event could expose further what Iran is doing in Yemen. So now put these three events that we've covered together, and it looks like Iran has had a bad weekend in the Middle East for sure. And looking at each of these events without the help of biblical prophecy, it would actually be hard to see how things are going to work out. Indeed, in terms of the Middle East, the Bible doesn't give a lot of details about the intermediate steps of all the jostling back and forth between powers. But the Bible actually does reveal the fate of each of these situations that I've mentioned. What's happening in Iraq, what's happening in Syria, and what's happening in Yemen. It might not discuss the intermediate steps, but in the long run, we know how each of these nations are going to turn in terms of their relationship with Iran. Now, if you are interested in geopolitics, if you live in the Middle East, or even if you live in Europe, these events, or even the United States or Israel, these events are important to watch. They're important to watch. If they fulfill biblical prophecy, as I'm saying that they do, then they will indeed lead to more prophecies that will affect your life. So that's why it's important that we cover these. It's also important that we look at these details in terms of what the Bible says so that we can know whether the Bible is in fact a true document, a true source of information, of knowledge, a true source of future knowledge, a true source of prophecy, or whether it is the work of a man. Bible prophecy is the proof of the Bible's authority. Either it's right with its prophecy or it's not. If God or the writers of the Bible can say something and it happens time and time and time again, that should be proof of the Bible's accuracy. That should be proof that the Bible is more than just the work of a man. And in these three areas, of these three nations of Syria, Iraq, and Yemen, the Bible does exactly that. It shows us what the end result will be. In Syria, the Bible doesn't indicate whether Israel's attack against the Iranian base is going to be the start of Iran's demise there. But we know, based on Bible prophecy, that we fully expect Syria to fall out of the Iranian orbit. We can know that that's going to happen for sure. That Iran is not, in the end, going to be in control of Syria's fate, even though it looks like right now they are in the best possible position to control Syria. We know that's not going to happen. In Iraq, the Bible doesn't indicate whether France's overtures towards the Kurds and its bold rhetoric is going to be strong enough to pressure the government to disband the Iranian-backed Shiite force. But we know, based on Bible prophecy, and that we fully expect Iraq to stay in the Iranian camp, even more so than it is right now. Macron is not going to be successful at disbanding or pressuring the Iraqi government, most likely, to get rid of the Shiite militias. Why? Because we know that Iran is going to control Iraq. Now, in Yemen, the Bible doesn't indicate whether Salah's giving up upon the Houthis as his way back into power is going to weaken Iran's position in the nation. But we know, based on Bible prophecy, that Iran is going to control most of the Red Sea passageway, including the Bab el-Mandab Strait. I think it's about 22 miles at the very base of the Red Sea, a strait in which all shipping has to go through if it wants to get into the Mediterranean Sea, to go through the Suez Canal. The Bible indicates Iran is going to control that passageway. And so, if we know that, we know that they're likely going to be there to stay inside Yemen. Based on biblical prophecy, we can know all these things. Now, we are certainly witnessing an increasing pace of events in the Middle East. Just these three events I've talked about are pretty big. The first time that Israel's attacked an Iranian base inside Syria. The first time, really, in a long time that a European leader is speaking out boldly against Iranian ambition in the Middle East. And since the first time in the Yemen civil war of the past couple of years, the leader of, not the Houthis, but at least their main ally, is basically throwing in the towel. These are big events, and they've all just happened this past weekend. Now, while it seems to be complicated, the Middle East, that is, in many respects it is, as time goes on, it's actually going to become less complicated. Events in the Middle East right now are increasingly defined by Iranian aggression and the collective response to that aggression. It is that simple. And that, too, is actually forecast in biblical prophecy as well. Now, if you want to read more about all of these prophecies that concern Yemen, Iraq, Syria, and more of the Middle Eastern nations, including Israel, and how they are going to affect you as well individually, you can read and request Gerald Flurry's book, King of the South. You can request that for free from watchjerusalem.co.il. You can request a hard copy if you like. If you're listening via web, you can simply go there right now by clicking the link at the bottom of the show. Please go ahead and read that book. It's going to help your understanding in the Middle East like no other source will. That's about all we have time for today on the program. Thanks very much for listening. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that by sending emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Please, again, go to our Facebook page and like us, and you can follow us there. We now have over 3,000 likes on Facebook. Thanks very much to our listeners for that. You've been listening today to Brent Nachtigall from Jerusalem, and the program's Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.